Good morning, everybody. This is Dave Weiner, and this is a Morning Coffee Notes coming to you from the beach, right on the beach today. This is the Florida beach where, let me just move the microphone down a little bit. Today's the 19th, by the way, 19th of May, 2005. And the beach is a place where you can take your car, and I've got a place I like to go, like just to go swimming and to sun and read and sort of just relax and breathe. It's a little bit further away from, they basically have these sort of portals, the on-ramps that you use to get onto the beach, and they aren't every street, not by a long shot. I mean, basically you've got a ramp. Ramps are anywhere from a mile apart to 5, 7, 5, 10 miles apart, actually, in some places. And then there are places that you just can't get because they're inlets and no ramps. They get you onto some parts of the beach that you can, like, basically get to by walking. And, like, those, nobody ever goes to those beaches, basically. Because there's so much beach and so few people that you basically, if you drive a mile or two, you can basically have a mile of beach to yourself. And that's what I like to do. So, like, right where the on-ramps are, people tend to bunch up, and there are hundreds of people right by the on-ramps. And I like to go a little further and just kind of get away from it all and sort of enjoy a little bit of a beach scene. You just can't get in a lot of other places because you don't usually get the quantity of beach. Like in California, for example, there are very, you know, like in the Bay Area, there are cliffs where the beach is. And so to get to the beach, you basically kind of have to walk down a cliff. And if there's no path, well then you don't go, because, like, who wants to get killed going to the beach? I mean, it's nice. The beach is nice, but it's not worth getting killed for, so. And in Florida, there's nothing, there's no such concern, basically. You can maybe get sunburned, and it's hard to even get chilled in the ocean. The ocean's already pretty warm. And right now it's high tide, so there's less beach when it's high tide. So it's mostly road and beach and water. There's a lot of water, and it might rain tonight. It's a little bit cloudy, but it's hot. It's in the really upper 80s, lower 90s, you know, and it's every day it seems to get just a little bit hotter, but I guess that's okay because I'm getting acclimated to the heat. It's getting to the point where I just kind of like it really hot relative to, like, California, where, you know, sometimes some parts of California, the summertime is the cold part of the year. San Francisco, for example, it's ramping down in temperature. Well, it's kind of funny the way that works, but they're, you know, they got the microclimates there, and it's different from a lot of other places, like, different from here. They do have seasons, though. You know, it's this is a resort town, and the place will completely fill up. You can't rent, you know, places for July and August. July and August are the high season. And then, you know what happens after July and August? You get the hurricanes. And this was the place where the hurricanes were really huge last year. And they're predicting another hurricane season like that. And so, for me, the question is, well, will I be here in the fall? And I don't know the answer to that. I don't think I'm going to be here in July and August. I think July I'm going to spend, believe it or not, in the Bay Area. Sort of beginning to feel a little exotic, getting some distance from there. And, you know, I kind of like the idea of chilling out a little bit. And then Bay Area offers that, as I said, in July. And then in August, I think I'm going to go to Europe. And spend some time in Great Britain and some time in Italy. And maybe some time riding the trains. And if you have some ideas, I know, like, Europe goes on vacation in August, but if you have some ideas on interesting things that we could do in August in Europe, let me know, because people that actually listen to my podcast, those are, like, I guess those are people I'd like to meet. It's different. Listening to a podcast, of course, is different from listening to reading a weblog. And I don't know what kind of podcast. I'm looking for new podcasts to listen to. What do I like? I mean, I posted a thing today about Todd Maffin. I think Todd could be a really good tour guide. And I would be willing to give Todd Tuesdays. And I'd like to give somebody else my Wednesday podcast listening. I'm not saying how long I'm willing to do that for. But for a while at least, you know, give it a try. What I like in podcasts I probably wouldn't like my own podcasts, to be honest with you. Especially not lately, because they tend to be a little bit rambling and, you know, kind of. Although I would really like the piece of podcast. If you got something like that, let me know, because I like themes and I like sort of intellectual talks. I like intellectualism. And, which reminds me, I had a phone talk a couple of days ago with Randy Commissar. Randy is a partner at Kleiner Perkins and a longtime board member on various different Silicon Valley companies, some of which I didn't even know that he was on the board of. Like, I didn't know he was on the board of TiVo, and he has some interesting ideas about TiVo. But that wasn't why I mentioned him. Oh, I know why. Because I suggested that and there seemed to be interested in podcasting, so, although I think he's been interested in this kind of stuff for a really long time. We talked about a lot of things. Randy was an early guy at Apple, and I was a Mac, and I was an Apple II developer actually, and a Macintosh developer. And talked about similarities between podcasting and those days, and there are really a lot of similarities. Yet we're kind of, you know, we still have yet to have the real platform. I don't think the iPod is the platform, because if you look at past history, all of the really killer platforms have had one thing in common, that you could use the platform itself to create for the platform. So that was the thing about the Apple II. It came with a programming language built into it, so that if you wanted to, you could write software in BASIC. And later on, they came with UCSD Pascal, and then the IBM PC came out, and the same thing. In fact, it certainly, people did develop software without using the computer, not on the computer itself. But those packages, I think, tended to not, they sort of missed the target. There's something about using the computer itself to make software for the computer that you're making software for. I don't know if that makes any sense. It enforces a sort of discipline. It creates an understanding of what the limits of the platform are, so that the software performs appropriately. It has features that a user would think of, that a user would be comfortable with, because the programmer was himself or herself a user. So it seems to be one of the fundamental rules of successful platforms is that you can do that, that you can make the products, you can make content or software, or whatever you want to call it, for the platform using the platform itself. Well, so then is the iPod, is it the platform? I know we call it podcasting, but is the iPod really the platform? And if following that rule, of course, it couldn't be, because the iPod as it shipped today in 2005, doesn't have the ability to record. You can't use it to record, like I'm doing right now. I'm recording this podcast on my Arcos and my Arcos PDA. And my Arcos, I think, it's a little expensive. Well, it's, you know, when you think about it, actually, it really isn't. I mean, iPods cost, you know, about $300-$400, you know, the high-end iPods. This thing costs between $600-$700, but another principle of being a software developer that I learned from the 80s is always pick a platform, always aim your software at the very high end of whatever it is, whatever platform it is you're developing for. So, like, go for, if everybody's got 198 or 192K of memory, then go ahead and develop for 256K. Everybody will say, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. Not, you know, 0.1% of the people have 256K. You know, seems kind of silly. But I actually had people say that to me. That was my target for the when I was doing IBM PC software in 1983. People said that you know, you're making a big mistake, Dave. You should be going for 192 because that's what Lotus requires, and so everybody's got 192. And I said, feh, you know, I think that by the time I'm ready to ship, it'll be 256. And sure enough, by the time I shipped, it was 256, then 384, and then 512, and then 640, and within 2 years, even that wasn't enough. We were going to expanded memory and, you know, extended memory and all these different ways of adding more memory to the PC, because memory was cheap and people's time was expensive, and if you could soup the computer up, buy a little bit of memory to make yourself more productive, people would generally do that. And I think that that's true here too. Today, buy the $600 platform. That's next year's, you know, that's next year's $400 platform. And 2 years from now, that's the $200 platform. And then 2 years after that, nobody's buying it because that's ridiculously underpowered. And your software had better been moving along with it appropriately. But yeah, this Arcos seems like a good thing to be thinking about right now. Why? Because it's open, because it runs Linux software, and where the iPod is a closed box, you know, my bet is that either the iPod opens up or it gets heavily competed with by something that's open, because this feels like a platform, this feels like something, the mobility feels like not like just a feature, it feels like a theme, like, you know. Finally, I know people have been saying this for years, and you know, but it hasn't really been true yet. I mean, you don't see. I know Russell Beatty, if he hears this, is probably going to be screaming up and down, no, 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 you don't get it. So if I don't get it, please educate me, because I don't know. What software can I buy, or could I download for the Arcos? Please, if there's software that I could buy, I would be delighted to do that. What a wonderful way that would be to spend money. I can't think of like a better way to invest money right now. Or if I could download it, I'd be happy to do that too, download it for free. I plan to write software for this thing, for sure. You know, when I figure out how I can get Frontier on here, because that's like how I like to develop software. Which, hint hint, is open source. So if you wanted to, if you had a couple of weekends and you wanted to port Frontier to Linux, go to kernel.scripting.com and download the source and get busy, because or if you know somebody, that would make me so happy. I can't tell you how happy it would make me. Anyway, so this seems like the good place to go, this Arcos, because I finally got so fed up with the iPod and its DRM and audible.com and its DRM, and the hell with that shit. You know, I wanted something where, okay, I can't put everything on here that I could put onto an iPod because it doesn't have DRM, and I will learn to live within those constraints, because, you know, for the 18 millionth time, my users taught me this in the 80s, that that if you don't trust me, then I don't want to buy your software. And I'm sorry that you can't trust all your users, but I happen to be one of those people you can trust, and I'm sick and tired of paying for the people that you can't trust with my time and my convenience and, frankly, with my money. Because, you know, when my laptop gets fried and my iPod gets fried, tell me exactly how I'm supposed to get the music off those things, you know, or the books off those things. I, you know, sure, yeah, I can call up support, and boy, they'll be glad to hear from me, I can tell you that. I mean, these days, you want products that don't require support, because support is one of these things that's not really usually given cheerfully. Usually it's given begrudgingly, and so try to avoid the experience when at all possible. Of course, this is our own fault, because we don't want to pay for it, and obviously it costs money to provide, so, you know, I'm not complaining, I'm just saying, you know, don't blame me if I don't want to buy your stuff that requires support, because I don't think you're going to give it to me. Anyway, hold on a second. Let me sit up. Yeah, I wanted to see if the tide is coming in, and yeah, the tide is definitely still coming in. It's getting higher. In another 10 or 15 minutes, the waves will be actually coming close to the wheels of my car. I probably should take a picture of this to go with this podcast, because it's actually kind of bizarre. Maybe I'll even do a movie. What do you think? So, let's see. We're 15 minutes into this. I forgot what I wanted to talk about. So, yeah. Oh, right. Randy Commissar. That's where I was. So, we had sort of like what you might call a wide-ranging discussion about podcasting. And I had an idea then, you know, while talking with him on the phone. And I thought it was a really cool idea. And I'm going to mention it here now because a couple of reasons. One is, if they don't want to do it, I think some other Silicon Valley venture capitalists should do this. And if they do it, I want to sort of lay the groundwork for it, and so everybody knows why they should be like so excited when they actually do it, and then how grateful they should be because they were being a truly visionary venture capitalist and sort of planting some seed corn for all of us, which is something that VCs that make billions of dollars off of Google IPOs should be doing for the community. They should give back a little bit. And I know John Doerr believes in this. John is a philanthropist and he's an organizer, and he gives generously of his money, and he gives tirelessly of his time to good causes. And what better cause would there be than the intellectual life of Silicon Valley? You know, it's something that will pay dividends to John's business, and Randy's business, of course, too, because Randy's a partner at Kleiner Perkins, also like John Doerr is. What better thing would there be to invest in than the intellectual life of Silicon Valley? Because face it, it really doesn't have much of an intellectual life. But that's weird, because it has this incredible wealth of intellect. That's the contradiction, you know. You know, you look at a place like Cambridge, Massachusetts, or even Berkeley, California, where, you know, you have this sort of these hubs of intellect, and, you know, there's just lots of stuff going on there that you can get involved in, and Silicon Valley isn't like that at all. I mean, there's Stanford University, but Stanford's kind of like, maybe I was missing something, but it felt like it was off on the side. You were always driving around Stanford, not through it. Whereas like in Cambridge or in Boston in general, you're always running into college campuses, and you're always running into people from colleges. And California isn't like that, because people drive everywhere, and so like you're not like running into people. Like, anyway, so here's the idea. Like, people are looking at me strange because the guy's talking into his PDA sitting there on the beach. But fuck them. They can't take a joke, right? Anyway, so here's the idea. The idea is, do a series of podcasts from Silicon Valley an infinitely extended series of podcasts going on out into infinity, where people who are participating in Silicon Valley in an intellectual way tell their stories. This is the kind of stuff you aren't going to get on the radio. You're not going to get it on public radio. You're not going to get it on public TV, because they don't have 40 minutes to let some egghead ramble, you know. They always got to dumb it down and make it relevant or interesting to the maximum number of people. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about things that, you know, have to be interesting to everybody. I want things that are interesting to really smart people who are interested in technology and are interested in knowing what is new, what's going on in Silicon Valley. And of course, it isn't just people who are in Silicon Valley itself, geographically or physically, but it's people who are in the spirit of Silicon Valley, wherever they may be. Like, I walk on the beach every day in Florida, and I like to take a podcast with me, 40 minutes worth of ideas. They're just what I love, and I would, one day a week, for sure, that would be Kleiner Perkins. I'd give Todd Maffin Tuesday, and I would be delighted to give Wednesday to Kleiner Perkins. And of course, in return for that, what I'll do is I'll talk about Kleiner Perkins, and I'll direct people to their podcast. And at the beginning of the of every podcast, you can say, this podcast was brought to you by Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield and Byers, the Silicon Valley's leading venture capital firm. And you can get a voiceover guy, and we can get some nice music to play in the background there. And every time people hear that, it'll, Kleiner Perkins will become like Leif Cabraser, Hyman and Bernstein, which if you live in the Bay Area, you probably, well, you might know what that means, but they sponsor some program on KQED, and you just hear their name all the time. But this isn't for everybody. This is for the people who like to think about technology and who are interested in this stuff. And like I said, so if Kleiner doesn't want to do this, well, I hope that they do. But I think that ultimately, like, every VC should do something like this. Give back, make an investment, do a little bit of brand development, work on your business model. Your business model, after all, is attracting the kind of people, part of your business model is attracting the kind of people who are curious enough about the world that they live in to want to be informed about the technology of the Valley. It seems to me those would be good candidates for executive positions at your company, or maybe even like general partners in your next fund, or maybe even, partners. Wait, I got that wrong. I mean limited partners, and maybe just like partners. You know, who knows where the next Ted Schlein's going to come from, or the next Randy Commissar, or Will Hurst, or Vinod Khosla, or, you know, you get the idea. So, so when I was describing this, you know, Randy got audibly, I can't say visibly because I was just talking to him on the phone, but he got audibly excited, and I was kind of hoping he would say, well, Dave, would you do that for us? But he didn't say that, so that's okay. And I didn't want to pitch him on me doing it anyway, because that's kind of tacky. But so I said, hey, you know, I even got the guy for you for this thing. And I said, and he said, yeah, who is it? And I said, Steve Gilmore. Steve would be great. And I know Steve would love to do it. And he would be just phenomenal. He's going to do this anyway, whether somebody pays him to do it or not. You know, he's going to do the Gilmore Daily Show, which he's already started, and he's going to do the Gilmore Gang, and he would be fantastic. I think that everybody misses the Gilmore Gang, and then what Randy said really kind of blew me away. He said, yeah, some of the people around here, like, just really miss that. And I go, of course they're listening to the Gilmore Gang. How dumb. Why didn't I figure that one out? Of course they are. They have to be. So there's my idea, I won't say it's a $10,000 idea, my 50-cent idea for today. And I'm just greedy, I'll tell you, honest to goodness. What I want is I want those people with the ideas, hey, even people with really shitty ideas, I get off on that too. I like, anything that gets me thinking is worth it to me. And sometimes somebody with really a poor grasp on some subject, just talking for 40 minutes, you know, my mind goes into idle on what he's saying, and then I start thinking of all kinds of things, and I love to think, and it's just, to me, anything that stimulates that is, like, totally worth it. So, anyway, so that's the idea. What else? Well, maybe that's it for now. I'm going doing some more car shopping. Getting itchy. I want to get on the road again. I'm doing some programming. Still owe you all an outliner. I know that's got to come pretty soon. And I got some ideas. I got an idea about the unification of OPML and RSS. This is the grand unification theory that I've been sort of putting off looking for. I finally did focus on it, and I figured it out, and it's really good. It's really gorgeous. It's, you know, I was a math major, and so you're always looking for things that make things simple, right? And and this is one of them, but I still want to work on it a little bit more, just sort of like try to think of more gotchas before I start the conversation, because it's going to be people wanting to discuss this. I hope people want to discuss it. So, and I guess, so look forward to those things upcoming in the future. Oh, actually, let me mention another thing. I'm looking for an FTP server for Windows. Now, I know I shouldn't be running Windows for my servers, but I do. And if you know of a good FTP server, one that's really simple to operate and configure and doesn't have any security holes, that's the big deal. I don't want security holes in the damn thing. We think that the FTP server in Windows Server 2003 is not the most bulletproof thing in the world, so we're looking for something to replace it with. So anyway, with that as my final coffee note for a coffeeless beach visit, this is Morning Coffee Notes for 26 minutes. See, the new perfect length seems to be a half hour. I just clicked on the screen and saw it's 26 minutes and 18 seconds, 19:20. Anyway, Morning Coffee Notes, May 19th, 2005. Coming to you from the beach in Florida. I'll see you all real soon now, okay? Take care, bye.